sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahadeyam karabhavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastama vivishavahai. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so this is the 63. Thank you. Yeah, no, I was just going to ask about that visa, I mean the FRO thing today. So then can we just arrange a car, and then if he's going, he can take the car. If he's not going, then I'll take the car. Okay, so then let me check. Okay, so now we're having a run of these verses. Oh, this is going the other way. They say the variety-filled material world is in truth a transformation of Brahman. It is not different. It is not different from Brahman. Some other philosophers say this material is born from the soul's thoughts. In truth, the individual soul is not different from God. The individual soul is himself the God of all gods.
Are we starting with that review?
Yes.
Okay. I thought we were going to finish the Upasampradaya, the last three pages or so, and then go into that.
I was just going to do it in the evening.
Okay. No problem. Sure.
Which page, Mel?
Hmm?
Which page?
We're on 63. Oh, I'm just reading the verse of 61, then we'll be on, 61 and, yeah, 61. The truth lies somewhere in this network of conflicting philosophies. Directly and indirectly, the non-dual Brahman is understood there. So he's making that point that it's in between all these kind of concepts that you actually find the absolute truth. Because all these persons they're only taking part of the absolute truth, because the difficulty is they don't actually want to know the absolute truth. They want to take it far enough that they themselves can be God. That's basically what they want. So now the problem comes is that, okay, they're going to become Brahman, but then the problem is if they are actually God, right, and Brahman and non-differentiated, how do they end up as a jiva? Right, so then that's a problem. So now the then it comes, okay, so then since we're dealing basically with rehashed Buddhism, right? So then the technical point is then there can't be a soul, right? Because in Buddhism there is no soul, it's just a void. And the same kind of thing, there's this illusion and all that. We haven't gotten into the details of how they say the illusion comes up. But basically, if you can deal with it from the Mayavad, you're not going to find much difference in what they come up with like that. So then they have this, so there's no soul. Then how do you have the concept of the soul? So that has to be because there's illusion. Now, that illusion everybody's an illusion, but is there somebody starting this illusion, or is each individual an illusion? So you have these two concepts. Then it's a matter of, okay, because we're all Brahman, how did we end up as individual jivas in illusion? So the Brahman itself became covered, and that's the way we're Brahman, if Brahman's covered, and then what we see here is not actually here. So we've been covered, and so now we're looking at this material world as we think it's here, but it's not. Or is it we're all little bits of Brahman, somehow or another has been separated off from Brahman, and then the illusory energy is just Brahman itself transformed. The funny part is Brahman transforms into this, but we somehow or another end up as jivas. So why would Brahman transform into the material world, but at the same time be covered to be the jiva? You know what I'm saying? Because a person doesn't have to be an illusion to actually appreciate himself, especially if that self is good. Right? If Brahman is so great, it's worthwhile merging into. Then why would you have to be a jiva in illusion to appreciate yourself? Because all you're dealing in the material world is a transformative of yourself. You know what I'm saying? Why can't you just, as yourself, then appreciate your transformed self? Why do you have to become illusion jiva to appreciate your transformed self? Mm-hmm. So they have all these funny problems because they want to be Brahman at the same time they don't want to remain as jivas. Right? So that's why all the problems come up. If the jivas are eternal, then that means, since the jivas are Brahman, but they're different from Brahman, that means they're Shakti of Brahman instead of the Shaktiman Brahman. And if that's there, then there's not a problem in what means that if Brahman is unlimited, why can't there be unlimited energies? Mm-hmm. So at least there can be another energy that is the material world. Mm-hmm. Right? So then there's no problem. And so the jiva is not supposed to be under the control of the material world, because that's unconscious. The jiva being conscious, he should be under what is the conscious energy of the Lord. Mm-hmm. So then you have that internal potency, the spiritual potency. Right? And since the jiva is an individual, God's an individual, and there's the external and the internal. So if the external is the illusion, the internal is the reality, then since we're individuals, it would naturally be there. Then what's the relationship and the activities of the liberated souls? Right? Means if the material world is an illusion, why does the soul relate to it? Unless there's some elements of it, of reality. Meaning... a reflection of a reality has some aspects of a reality. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not like you look in the mirror and, you see your own face, but, everybody else sees a completely different thing, Does that make sense? You look in the mirror and you see a human head, everyone else sees a buffalo head. No, it doesn't work. Or you see a buffalo head and everybody else sees a human head. Or, maybe you see a buffalo, they see an aardvark. So it means it's not like that. It's what's in the mirror is what's in the reality. But it just doesn't fully represent, because it's just a reflection. It's not it doesn't have all the functions. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maharaj, how can you answer to the people who say it's like pastime?
It's pastime, but then the point is pastime means that there has to be a mind, and there has to be an appreciation of that. So if that is, then that means the Brahman is personal. But they're saying it's impersonal. And if Brahman doesn't transform, why would it, if it's unchangeable, why would it change into the material world? And if you say it didn't, illusion covered the living entities. Brahman is above, if you take that other kind, which is, you know, generally used. Then where did the illusion come from if there's only Brahman? Okay, we can say the jivas are covered by illusion. You know, like the sky in the pot is still sky, but you think it's just the amount that's in a pot. Okay, you could get by on some kind of frail logic there, but where'd the pot come from? There's no pot in the sky. There's just unlimited sky. That's why you're using the Akash, you know, the sky example. And then the air and the sky in the pot is not actually separate from the sky, but it just appears to be. But where did the pot come from? Right? If all there is sky, where did the pot come from? So in any case, however you cut it, there's going to be differences. And so that means Brahman is not undifferentiated by all their definitions. And ours, there is. Because the Brahman is full of qualities. So those qualities are not changing and everything. So it doesn't transform. It's energy, the energy is there, that transforms. And then those qualities are permeating what the transformation. Therefore, it appears attractive to us because we're Brahman. We can only be attracted by Brahman. So it's the Brahman of Brahman's qualities that's pervading the Shakti of Brahman that's been transformed. And so therefore, then we think it's alive, it's nice, it's something, you know, interactive. You know what I'm saying?
Can we say that it's the fact to not accept to be a spirit soul is a problem to understand this point?
Yeah, well, the whole problem stems from there's not the soul. Otherwise, if there is the soul, then, you know, and he's always the soul, then you can't exactly merge. You know, and you're active here and not happy because it's a temporary situation, so why wouldn't you be happy on an eternal situation? Right here is temporary and everything's judged by one's karma. Right? So now if we find that we're not working with karma, you know, you're not dealing in the material platform. So why would that be a problem? Right? In the spiritual world you have a family, it's there for eternally. You don't have to worry that, you know, everybody dies. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You have a position in society. It's eternal. The body is eternal. The effects of your endeavors are eternal. So who would have a problem with that? You know what I'm saying? In the material world, the problem's not with activity. The problem is feelings or that. The problem is that all these are temporary. That's the problem. So the Mayavadi's complaint's not inherently about, you know, name, form, qualities, all these things. It's that these are all temporary here. That's the problem. So if they're not temporary, who has the problem? You know what I'm saying? If you look at it in reality, somebody becomes a pessimist because they were an optimist and it didn't work. So that's why they go from karma to jnana. Right? Trying to explain why all my romantic ideas about, you know, being happy and enjoying eternally in the material world didn't work. Then you become pessimistic. You start to analyze it. What's going on? Right? And then you have to come up with some kind of philosophy because you're not connecting it to the Supreme Lord. You're not connecting it. We're not supposed to be here. You know what I'm saying? If you take it that there's only the prison, you know, that's all there is. And the prison is bad. Right? So therefore, then good just means getting out of prison, but there's nothing else outside the prison. So then you just merge into the outside of the prison. But if you understand is the prison is there because you didn't act properly in the normal world. So all it is get out of prison, go back to the normal world and be normal. You know, in other words, give up the criminal mentality, go back to the normal world, and then you'll be happy. But the only difference is in the example they're both temporary, but what we're talking about, one's temporary, one's eternal. You know, because the soul is eternal. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just all the elements they have to make their philosophy out of. Unfortunately, the difficulty is that aspect of that Brahman doesn't have qualities and the soul is not eternal. It doesn't actually exist. That's why we say it's Buddhism. It's not actually Vedic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maharaj, in your example yesterday about the pious and impious, so in the prison scenario, just be a kind of prisoner which have a nicer facility.
That, or it just, it's, yeah. Well, it's like this. Let's say you had a comprehensive prison. Okay? So, you know, now they have, you know, a prison just for the really bad guys. And then they have, you know, regular prisons that, you know, are bad, you know, for bad, but not so bad. You know? And then they have the ones for, you know, your you know, businessmen and office workers and that are basically okay guys, just they got greedy and did something. You know what I'm saying? You know, if the office guy kills someone there, he goes to the main kind of prison. But if all he did is embezzle money or do some trick like that or didn't pay his income tax, he ends up in one of these other ones. You know, it's kind of like being in high school with a fence around you can't leave. You know, that kind of a building rather than, you know, a fortress. Does that make sense? So now you had a comprehensive or had all of that. Right? So now, and you based it upon how well they behaved. There's rules in the prison, how well you behave. You behave well, you're in a minimal kind of security kind of thing. You don't behave well, you put in the maximum security. You know, you end up with the animals, trees. I mean, you're not getting out of that. You know, others then, you know, then you're just there kind of common people who don't have, you know, great facility, but, you know, it's okay. You know, like that. Then you have those who can do extra work and get, you know, little gold stars on their little, you know, whatever it is, piece of paper or whatever. So then they even get some extra facilities. You know, there's a lounge room and there's maybe, you know, free drinks on the side and snacks or, you know what I'm saying? It just increases. Does that make sense? They get better clothes, they have a nice bed, like that. Well, the other guys, you know, have their regulars. Then it just goes down. So you just have a comprehensive, it has everything. And depending on how you behave, you move up and down in the prison. But the point is you're still in prison.
The point you made is that for the Westerners, when you talk about increasing the piety, we end up with either the Puritans or the Smartis. Is that we don't even understand the rules for upgrading to this higher facility.
Yeah, or that was mainly not so much piety, I was talking about moralism.
Moralism, okay.
Because piety, then you have people, they give in charity, they do very nicely, and basically that concept is there, but they're not getting full advantage because they're only basically... they're giving to the needy, so that's there. But also sometimes they're giving to unqualified. You know what I'm saying? Means when you're just giving to poor people, that's just, you know, part of what you do. That's the side. Main charity is to give to qualified people. Because the idea is that your intellectual class is not endeavoring for an occupation because there's more important things to do. You know, knowledge, your education, your medicine, your law, the very essential elements of the society, you know, your rituals. So that you have to focus on. There's no time to do something on the side. Right? You know, since you're talking about daily worship and everything like this, we're not talking once a week, you know, or just something in the evening. We're talking, you know, serious kind of thing. So therefore they need to live by charity. So that's the main place where charity goes, right? And then you also take care of those within the area of your influence, like that. And there maybe you have some extra things outside that, you know, let's say in your town, so, you know, all the, you know, poor people or deformed people or crazy people or widows or someone who just, they can't take care of themselves, so therefore that kind of thing is done. But it's generally just in your locale because it's not, you don't have the international kind of element. Does that make sense? You know, so within your community that you're seeing that it's going on. In your town, your community, something you're that's doing. Communities are taken care of, then you don't have to. But then the city might take care of those that the communities don't take care of. You know, something like that. So that's just natural to be done. But that's just side. You know, it's just like after cooking, you wash the dishes. But the focus is not on washing the dishes. You know, nobody can cook because they'll get the dishes dirty. You know what I'm saying? It's just the normal thing you do. So you're giving a charity to qualified people and qualified elements, but you're also taking care of those who are not. You know, just as a matter of course. Is that
so? The Western mentality wouldn't hit Dharma. They would hit more like...
They're maybe doing the things of Dharma, so because they don't know about it, they won't get as much benefit as if they did. Okay. Some people do have, it's my duty, I must do like this and everything like that. You know, so but you means, yeah. It's more rare. You know what I'm saying? Your old families, your old people who kind of accept the concept of tradition. Then there's a sense of duty. So that mode of goodness. So that actually is the element of the Dharma, but it's not necessarily scientific, and they don't actually understand. So they'll get some benefit, but it's not necessarily they get all the benefit. You know, it's just like, let's say you eat something and, you know, it tastes nice and it's nutritional and this and that. You don't necessarily know how it was made or who made it or what the ingredients are, but you're getting benefit. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say you're eating something, okay? Let's take some, you know, people, well, let's say, appreciate food. So they're eating, and it's nice. You know, it tastes good and like that. Then you say, oh, wow, this is from, you know, we got this from some rare, rare thing. We had it flown in from this, you know, one guy who's, you know, had a traditional farm, you know, for three generations, and he does like this and that, and he does this, and so many things like that. Then you get so much more appreciation and benefit from what you're eating. You understand? So like that. That's the whole idea with these things. Is you adjust all, you make adjustments to the environment, making adjustments to your knowledge, because that's what you can adjust. You make means by the more you understand the environment you're working in, and the more you use that environment in connection with what you're doing, the more advantage you get. Does that make sense? Like that. So that means that someone who doesn't really know what's going on could do something that's proper by previous karma. So he's getting the benefit of that, but he doesn't know why. You know what I'm saying? The musician, it's like, let's say you take the musician or the writer, you know, somebody who they're working in the area of inspiration. Okay? It's not that they just sit down and you know, intellectually go through and create some music and go through, okay, you could put this here and you could put that there. I think if you do that, I think technically the name for that is called house. Like that. Yeah? You understand? You understand? Anyone else understands house? Okay. House is you just take these techno kind of, you take some beats and you take some other things and just put them all together, and it just has a beat. You know, it's you know, yuppies when they sit in their car going to work, they put on house, you know, like that, because you know there's not much there in them, and so it just kind of has a beat and kind of goes, you know, so, like that. It's not meant for, it's not you're talking about great inspiration here, you know. So the thing is, but it came from, they'll just say they were inspired. They were inspired in the music, and they know how to translate what they are hearing into where you can hear it. You know what I'm saying? Or the writer can put it down and into their literary work, or into their play or something like that. You know, the artist can paint it on a canvas or make a sculpture. So that's the point. Is where did that come from? Because if you technically talk to them about how it happens, you can understand it didn't come from them. They just happened to be the medium for it. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, no, nothing's happening. It's not flowing. You know, oh, yeah, it's really flowing. So they're saying, I mean, in that kind of world, these are the terms they use. Right? You know, or someone goes to a party and they just kind of sit there. Another time they go to a party and they're all active and everyone's inspired and interacting. So it's not coming from them. You know what I'm saying? You know, if it's continuously working, then they become identify with it and attach to it and have the confidence and the arrogance and all those kind of things. But when it runs out, it just runs out. Can't get it back. So what it is that's just for previous karma. The guy's just having that thing because previously he has sat and done the sadhana for music or done the sadhana for art or done the sadhana for that. So he's studied, he's worked under a teacher, he's done the piety. And so he's done more piety, let's say, in music than just for the results of that lifetime. So therefore in next lifetime it's just spontaneous. But if he doesn't cultivate it and use it properly, then it won't increase. It'll just be lost. You know what I'm saying? So if it's enough that they are able to maintain that cultural lifestyle, then it keeps increasing in that area. If not, they drop out of that scene into the Western scene. They don't have the connection between their previous studies and the inspiration now. Does that make sense? So in other words, instead of it, let's say, coming through the natural thing of goodness, now it comes through passion and ignorance. Mm-hmm. Same light, just different colors. Does that make sense? So that's the way it is in everything. Somebody who's so good at something, he didn't become good now. He became good from his previous work. No one's just becoming good now. How does that work? I mean, of course, there's Hollywood, but other than Hollywood, it just doesn't work. It doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That answer it, or did we get so much into explaining the example that we missed the
Western mentality based on passion ignorance wouldn't really know what dharma is.
It wouldn't know what dharma is, so they might be doing it, but without knowledge. So the point is they'll get the benefit from what they've done, but because they don't know, they could stop doing it. But you won't get as much benefit as if you have knowledge, because then you try to improve the environment. All it is here they did it. They didn't know what it was, so they speculate about it.
Could I stretch to say that moral would then be the attempt to keep that without the knowledge? I mean, so I try to...
Morality? No, morality, one always has to remember, morality is just an aspect of artha. You know, if we were to really, really just look at it from the objective point of view, morality is simply part of artha. The reason we're worried about morality is that if people aren't moral, what I have, what I've gained, may be lost due to their improper behavior. That's the bottom line. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Let us say people are living sinfully, but if it didn't have an effect on your life, what do you care? If it won't change your life. But if by people acting badly, it might affect your children or your environment or, you know, the bigger environment. You know, then why would you care at all? You know, you don't care that your neighbor's got the flu. You only care if, you know, he coughs in your face. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that it's actually economics, but because it is the platform of trying to make people nice that generally most philosophies and religions use, basically all mundane ones. Right, except for your, let's say, your smartas and your. I mean, those are functioning on the, you know, your six systems and all that. Then, because until you get varnashram, you don't actually get up into dharma. Anything else, the nothing else is dharma. Varnashram's dharma. because it identifies what everybody's position is. Does that make sense? So everything else is simply just ways to see that everything goes nicely. So all it is that they've developed that very much. People not understanding Dharma, you know, misbehave, so therefore they make rules of artha to see that the economic, you know, position maintains. Does that make sense? So that's all it is. But as we said, the world religions or philosophies profess this as you think it's spiritual. So that's the mistake devotees will take, and that mundane morality is spiritual, like devotional service. Devotional service is good, morality is good, therefore morality and devotional service are the same. It's just faulty logic. You know, it means morality is what you engage in the Lord's service, but it's the service that's important. The morality is just the normal thing. Just like if I say, you know, whatever you cook, you offer. You know? So that means, you know, edible food is what's being offered to the deity. Right? Now, that's just taken as normal. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, or even take another aspect of this. I say, you know, okay, the house owner asks, well, you know, but, you know, in our house, you know, we have a little altar, we have a nice, you know, some pictures and stuff like that. And so what is the worship? You know? And so if you say, whatever you cook, you offer to the deities. That's what you do. So if you cook once a day, you offer once a day. You cook three times a day, you offer three times a day. No, whatever it is that you do, that's what you offer. Right? Okay. Did I mention vegetarian?
No.
Okay. So that's why we never really mention morality. It's like being vegetarian. It's just you're supposed to behave nicely. What else are you going to offer to Krishna? Bad behavior? You know what I'm saying? You offer good behavior to Krishna. So therefore, that's just the normal situation. You don't think about that. It's not all about that. We don't, you know, now we don't start professing all to the devotees talking about vegetarian and all this kind. It's like, of course. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, when we start to make a philosophy out of morality, that's like making a philosophy out of vegetarian. But we're not talking about Vedic vegetarian. We're talking about Western vegetarian. And therefore, from that side, that's why we're vegetarian. And then the problem comes is that in the Western vegetarian, technically, eggs are included. Because they take it from the Judaic tradition. So dairy means, you know, everything other than meat. Right? Meat and fish are on one side, and you know, your vegetables, grains, milk products, eggs are all on the other side. How they did that, I'm not sure. Probably because they found it's the only thing you can mix it and that doesn't kill you. So, otherwise, it should have been on the other side. But, you know, does that make sense? But if it was there, then you wouldn't get your frittata, you know. So then, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is that it's based on that. So then if you had devotees talking about just being vegetarian, it's all about being vegetarian, and they forget about the offering, it's just the, you know, it's just about being vegetarian, you know, and they're just quoting from, you know, New Age magazines and stuff about that and quoting from there, what would you think? Is this really devotional? Is this the whole point of Krishna consciousness? No. Of course we're vegetarian, but that's not the focus. So that was the point in the class, is that, of course, we're moral, but that's not the focus, and especially not Western morality. Right? Means he says, no, but you have to behave properly. That's just etiquette. You know what I'm saying? You go before the queen, you curtsy or bow. You know, you meet a gentleman, you shake their hand. It's just etiquette. It's not morality. in our sense.
Could I say then that Artha being superior already assumes it? Dharma being superior to Artha.
It's superior to Artha because it's the reason why you should do it. It considers the whole society. Because morality only looks at the economic element of society. It doesn't look at its effect. Right? You know what I'm saying? If I don't steal your crude oil, and you don't take my, you know, raw, metallic ores, then we're moral. But now, whether we're supposed to be digging out all that ores and taking out that oil, that's not discussed. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. So whatever is normal there, then that's, you understand? So that's the whole point, is that means there'll be a whole thing about, you know, devotees have to be moral and properly behave, but it's all just to interface with the Western culture. But when you say Vedic culture, oh, that's fanatic, why do we have to do that? We're Westerners. Or slightly, it says, this is the fun part. The ones that want to break all the rules, then we're Westerners. And if you say, no, you have to do this, no, but we're not the body. Isn't it? It's always. You know, it's never coming so proximity, otherwise they'd look stupid. But, you know, it's all this whole thing is we don't have to do that, we're in the modern, we're in this and that. But at the same time you say you can't do this, oh, we're not this body. Why are we restricted? But you just said basically we're this body because you have to fit in a thing. And why do we have to fit into the Vedic but not with the modern? Don't upset the Western people, but you can accept the Vedic and you can upset God. That's okay. You know, God understands. You know what I'm saying? So it's a little freaky. You know, you're dealing as if you have possession, but where's the love? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, you don't know where to apply possession. The feminine nature is whatever you're attached to, there's that sense of possession. You know, so therefore you see in the modern culture is the feminine nature can apply possession to things they don't possess. The mood of possession, the things they don't actually have control over. And so in the same way, then we possess, you know, God has to understand. Who can say God has to understand? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. If your wife says, oh, my husband has to understand, you may like it, you may not like it, but, you know, that's the way it is. But if some woman that you have no connection with says, well, he just has to understand, it's kind of like, who's she to say that? You know what I'm saying? So the jiva is feminine, where do they have the right to say, well, God has to understand? Where's this possession? Possession is through prema. Short of prema, God's not impressed. You know, if we're talking arrogance here and all those things, you know, you're taking that hard line there. You know, that's Vishwanath's line. It means, in other words, if there's arrogance, it's Vishwanath's line. You know, bhakti starts at prema. Anything less than that's just sadhana. You're practicing to be a devotee. You're not actually a devotee. Real devotees are prema bhaktis, bhaktas. Baladevs is then if somebody's submissive, then it's, yeah, no, because it's in line with bhakti, it's in pursuance of bhakti, it's as good as. Because Krishna will see it like that. But as soon as you have attitude, then, hey, he doesn't need the attitude. Because the attitude's not about pleasing him.
So as soon as you get the attitude, you get Krishna, right?
Yeah, so then it's just, then the end, we have got nothing. So that's the whole point. That's why these both are there. Is that the main thing is that Baladev's aspect shows, but at the same time, you have to know what's the actual reality. Because if you don't know that prema is actually what you have to get to, then, you know, along the way, it's good, it's fine. It's like, you know, like the Pachetas are saying, you know, we're an illusion. We're a family life distracted by family life. But if you probably check, they'd probably be, compared to anyone, probably least distracted than anybody. You know what I'm saying? So, but the thing is, the point is if you're talking about 100% absorption in the Lord, then it's a distraction. Because there's so many elements that aren't actually, means you can see it that way, but your child being selfish is not out of prema. You know, it's not. So you can accommodate and understand that the potency, there's Krishna's and I've taken that duty and all that. But the thing is technically the soul doesn't require to do that to develop love for Krishna. So that's why it says it's a compromise. A concession, probably. Concession for sense gratification. Because it's not actually necessary. But because of conditioning, therefore you have to basically say it is necessary because that's just the way it is. But if you want to be really, you know, when people start to get objectives, they somehow only get objective about how you don't have to follow the authority of the Vedas. But if you get really objective, you know, why do you need the Western culture? You know, why do you need any of that? You know, and the Western culture is always impressed by excellence in something. Nobody else did it, and they did it. You know, people think they're weirdos. The Wright brothers, when they're trying to fly, people thought they were crazy. And then as soon as they figured out they weren't so crazy, then everybody tried to copy them and get all the benefit from it. You know, so one brother worked on the airplanes. The other brother, all he did was lawsuits against other people that simply took their stuff and tried to call it their own invention. So if he had helped his brother, they would have actually gotten ahead. But because they were all giggling the lawsuits all the time, therefore it went more slowly. That's why, you know, later all the big stuff was done by other people. Mm. You know, so that's the thing is this. It's the material world is totally unnecessary to the living entity. There's nothing here of any value to the living entity. The only value is that you can engage in Krishna service. So the only value for the jiva is Krishna service. And the material world can be engaged in Krishna service. Therefore, it's a benefit. So that's the bottom line. So therefore, if one's saying, what is the actual connection to Krishna consciousness? Right? What's the connection to Krishna consciousness? Let's say, I'm a food freak and so I don't eat sugar, because sugar will kill you. Okay? Yeah, because the problem is how is the Krishna conscious connection? Because Krishna eats sugar. Prabhupada said, you don't want to eat sugar, fine, but Krishna eats it. So make sure he gets his sweets and everything like that. He likes it. You know, you don't like it, don't eat it. Fine. You know, like that. And then we'll say, no, but Krishna this and Krishna that and Prabhupada this and Prabhupada that. You know, it's just like, hey, you know, that you have to hear it from the acharyas. They know Krishna, so they'll say what it is.
I want to dwell on your example, Mark, but they say that it's refined white sugar. There's no such thing in the spiritual world. We're just eating something that's very unhealthy for you.
They have rock candy in the spiritual world, so why don't they get into rock candy? That would be the natural alternative. Because how many things can you make with gur? Right? And generally in the West, that I know of, unless it's changed, gur is illegal. At least it was in America back in the 70s. It's not allowed in. Because from that, you can spin it, and then you can... I don't know what it is, but there's some reason it's illegal. It's a business, it's an economic thing. Yeah. That turbinado sugar, they'll eat turbinado sugar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what turbinado sugar is? White sugar that they put the molasses back in.
Okay.
It's not the original.
Yeah.
You know, you squeeze the sugar cane, you cook it down, and then you crystallize it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the original stuff. Mm-hmm. So all it is sugar is there. All it is white sugar means you take the molasses out. That's all. Mm-hmm. So it's not that sugar wasn't there. It just comes with the molasses. So now if that stronger flavor it will work in your preparation, then great. But if you need a more fine flavor, then there's rock candy. So I haven't heard one food freak mention rock candy. Because in their mind, it's just, if it's sugar, it's bad for you. But the point is gur is sugar also. It's all sugar. All it is the... The sucrose crystallizes. Mm-hmm. That's your crystallized sugar, that's all. Because mm-hmm. they say crystallized sugar, because sugar can also be not crystallized. Mm-hmm. You don't put it's like a chain reaction. You put a crystal in there, all the rest of it will crystallize. Like when the boys that make the gour, mm-hmm. they cook it down to, I guess, the right consistency, then you have to take a little bit of it out, mm-hmm. like half a bucket of it out. And then you take that and just on the side, you just, like with a paddle, just keep mixing it, and by that process, that little bit will crystallize. Mm-hmm. Then you put that back into the rest of it that's not crystallized, and then it'll all crystallize. It just starts a chain reaction. Very simple. Mm-hmm. So sugar's already there. Mm-hmm. It's just whether the molasses is there or not. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And the problem with the white sugar is that you've only removed the molasses, which is around the crystallized sugar. You haven't removed the impurities inside the crystallized sugar. That's what rock candy does.
Mystery.
So rock candy is medicinal. Mm. Like that. It's actually more, I mean, on certain different elements, it's more medicinal than your gour. Your gour will have your iron and everything like that. But this other is actually on cleansing the liver and the system. Then the rock candy is very good. You can eat a kilo of rock candy, it'll only be good for you. Eat a kilo of sugar, then you got some problems.
Right.
And it'd be very difficult to eat a kilo of gour. You wouldn't be able to do that on a regular basis. It's just you can only eat so much. It's so strong, you know. So the whole thing is, but it's coming from a Western viewpoint. It's not coming from a Vedic. Because if it's coming from a Vedic, okay, you want a finer sweetener. Then go with rock candy, because that's the normal thing. Like rasgullas, they take the sugar and purify it and make it into rock candy. It means into mystery syrup. It means that they don't crystallize it. Mm-hmm. You take the sugar and then you purify the sugar, so all you have left is there. That's why rasgullas are on one level of those who work in that, they're considered medicinal. Like you get a bad stomach, eat hot rasgullas, it will get rid of your bad stomach. You have diarrhea or something. It means when they finish cooking them, they're still really hot. You eat them then. They don't taste as great because you know, milk products are better cold. So when they're hot, you can't taste it as much.
Your prophet say for loose motions, hot jalebis.
Hot jalebis? That's more. No, that's for cold.
Oh. Okay.
Hot jalebis is for cold.
Okay.
Hot rasgullas is for loose motions.
Oh.
And if it's blood dysentery, then hot. Fried eggplant and puris.
Right.
But it has to be so hot you can hardly touch it. Mm-hmm. That like means right out of the pan, yeah, onto your plate. If it's not that hot, it will kill you. But if you eat it like that, it'll get rid of it. You know, so you have to know how to cook, the temperature rise, you know, it's only the oil's only been used once.
Yeah.
If you use it twice, it doesn't matter. Even if it's hot, it'll still be bad.
Mm.
So all these things they don't know because they're not coming from Ayurveda. So it's all from speculative Western things, which, you know, this year they say it's this, and the next year they find out it's,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
It's bad. So it's just, that's the whole point, is then you have this whole movement of things based on speculations on Western so-called science. Which is simply, you know, speculative elements. It means you do it long enough, you start to see patterns. So, you know, they've been doing it for 1,000 years, then you know, they start to see some patterns in it. But it wasn't until 100 years ago that doctors actually started to consider about bacteria and why most of their patients were dying. Some doctors would never take their patients to the hospital because it was understood you take them to the hospital, they die. Because somebody figured out that there's pathogens. But the Vedas always know about it. What's an indigopa? An indigopa is a pathogen. Mm. So they know about them. That's why everything's clean and washed and all that. Mm. You know, so you know, they're so proud that only 100 years ago they kind of, the things they talk about now that don't kill people, they only started doing then.
So Maharaj, it seems that to fully understand that, or to understand to a certain degree, the Vedic affords this overlapping of elements like Vitala, Chinta, Veda, Vedatata, and so many other the sciences which hold in. And as Westerners, we don't tend to have that. So, what is this part of it?
Baha?
Just turn it back. Hmm? It's quite big. We went back.
So is it like this big?
Yes.
Oh, it's a bamboo spider.
Okay. Red and black.
Yeah. Okay.
So, as the Westerners, we tend to put things in boxes, and this is why it's hard to see the overall.
There's no culture. It's not a complete, whole human endeavor. That's why every 10 years, whatever was the theory, 10 years later, it is they'll find it's the opposite. All it is it's like this. Let's say, they just take one aspect of it. Just like in the 50s, advertisements for cigarette smoking, they had pictures of doctors. You know, it means if you're worried about weight gain, you're worried about, you know, low energy, you know, you have to work a lot, and, you know, you don't think, then smoking is great for that. Keeps you thin, you know, because you don't eat as much, so you don't get fat, you know, the bit of energy, you know, and all this thing, so it seemed great. So it wasn't until the 60s they figured out that, you know, it'll kill you. And then, because now it's a big business, it took them another, basically, 40 years to get it official that it'll kill you. Otherwise, they're always saying, no, no, it doesn't exactly kill you. You know what I'm saying? So this is how the speculative things work. It means you read something that's there, you know, and check. If they have archives of anything, look at something now, whatever's the big thing. Go back 10 years and see what they said about it. Or what was the thing then? Generally, it's opposite. All it is you take the same thing and you take one aspect of it, what somebody, you know, it's important to them by the modes. They build a whole, try to make a complete system out of part of something. And then because it's not whole, wherever the weaknesses are, then someone will come along and say, that's bogus. Now this takes care of that weakness. But what they do is they throw out the part that does have value. They'll never put it all together. Because to put it all together, then you would have to have the element of authority. And that, in other words, nature is the authority. But they always take it that man's the authority, and we just use this non-conscious nature to, you know, we figure it out. No, it's always there. You know, it's just, you know, that's the thing. So it's just, you don't take all the things along with it. So so why would there be a problem? Like quinine, okay? It's a bark of a tree. You take that bark of the tree for the malaria. There's no side reactions. It kills the bugs because it's got the quinine in it. And it has also, you know, another so many ingredients in it, you know, because it's just the bark. And so it doesn't kill you. Right? Now, the Western will remove only the quinine from the quinine bark. And taking that, it'll get rid of the bug, but it's also bad for your liver. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem, is that's how they do it. So the point of taking things out and making the white sugar, that the Western culture has done that. The Vedic culture, they either use the gore or use the rock candy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. And then the Vedic culture gets the blame, oh, all the sugar. That's means sweets are there, but this whole thing, what they're doing, it's their own thing. And then they'll blame the Vedic. They'll never blame their own culture.
I heard a friend saying that the system of sucking, the mechanic milking the cows, it sucks a protein which is the protein the cow uses to block the milk, which if you do manually, it won't come out. Mm-hmm. Saying that. So
yeah,
that mixed to the milk causes all the allergy, which people now say, oh, milk is causing allergy.
Well, it's just like the pasteurizing. I think it's pasteurizing. No, homogenizing. They break the fat particles into one quarter of their natural size, so it goes straight out of the stomach wall into the bloodstream. It doesn't go through the digestive process. Mm-hmm. And so then they say it creates cholesterol. It's only homogenized milk does that. Unhomogenized milk doesn't create cholesterol. You understand? So that's the problem. They create their own things and then blame the Vedic culture. And it's so easy because of authority issues. That's all. It's very simple. So the thing is, you know, in other words, if you're going to spend so much time reading, you know, these modern books, why not study the Vedic? But then the problem, that's just for the cultural aspect, but the point is whether using the modern or the Vedic, if you're not connecting it to Krishna, and if you make it primary over Krishna consciousness, then it's still useless. Even the Vedic, if it becomes more prominent than Krishna consciousness, is still useless. Right? The philosophy is always the primary, and the culture is the support. Never becomes, and then there's a hierarchy even in the culture, you know, like that. So knowledge is the highest, then influence, right? Then economics, then, you know, in other words, what is the knowledge? What's that going to, and what effect that'll have on the people? Then you look at it, economics. If you take economics as the prime thing, then you're always going to be wrong. You know, they say it's not economically viable. I mean, if you really want to look at economically viable, then modern culture is really not economically viable. You know, village life, that's more economically viable. So then the natural thing is all these really practical, you know, people only think about practical economics. Why don't they just go back to the village? But they don't. They're looking at what's practical in this non-practical environment. Because you know, if you're in the rural environment, then you have consideration of people and in what's around you and this and that. But in the cities and the modern kind of thing, you don't have to worry about people. At least, you know, that's the way they set it up. So you don't know what's going on. So then it works for them. Because then the more impersonal it is, the easier it is to you know, just make very practical decisions. I'm not sure how we got into all that. It had something to do with the soul and...
House music.
House music. But it started... Oh, it went off from that.
It's from morality and ideas.
But how do we get into morality?
I asked the question about yesterday's class.
Oh, it was just about yesterday's class. Okay. So I never thought it was just the natural.
Because it's all one.
It's all one. Yeah, yeah. It's all one. Okay. I'll continue with the VT. Okay. In verses 28 to 33, we went back just to understand as that was like the overview of the impersonalist philosophy. So in verses 28 to 33, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has briefly addressed the Advaitavad philosophy. What follows is a more extended refutation of impersonalism drawn from the fifth chapter of the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, impersonal knowledge. When man at this level realizes the limitations of this knowledge, he begins to think how he can elevate himself further. Being of unsteady mind, some people then force logic further, but not finding any success by logic, they use certain words symbolically and take support of the process of negation. Right? Because they say Brahman or these other things are actually symbolic because the definitions that they give to them, they use them differently. So you define Brahman one way, but you apply Brahman in another way. So it's actually symbolic. You know, the soul is actually symbolic because in their mind there is no soul. You know, illusion is symbolic because there actually isn't any illusion. It's an illusion that you think there's illusion. Right? There's only Brahman. Right? So then, you know, how far back does this illusion go? It's an illusion to think that there's illusion. Okay. If form exists in this world, the absolute must be formless. Right? That's their idea. Who said that's the way it is? Right? You know, criminals have form and feelings and eat food, so therefore, you know, normal people don't. There are no normal people. Because, you know, in other words, when the normal Brahman becomes covered by illusion, then you get a criminal. Right? Otherwise, as soon as you leave the prison, there is nothing. It's just a oneness. You know what I'm saying? So, Why does it have to take that? Well, I mean, it just so naturally they accommodate this. If change exists in this world, then the absolute must be without change. And we'll say that, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have form and all that. The change doesn't mean that you do something. Change means that your nature doesn't change. Mm-hmm. So that's the point. So Saguna Brahman means the absolute with qualities. So the absoluteness doesn't change, but the qualities can transform. If qualities exist in the world, then the absolute must have no qualities. If there is distinction in this world, then the absolute must have no distinctions. By such interpretation, an indistinct absolute entity is imagined. Because it means that you're imagining means you're imagining it with the mind, but the mind is a material element, so it actually can't be imagined. It can't be thought about, it can't be rationalized, it can't be spoken about. You know, and you can't say, I can experience it, because the experience is coming through the mind. So that means there's actually no way to be involved in this Mayavad philosophy.
Right.
You know, or the yogi he experienced, or this, whatever is beyond, it doesn't exist, because something spiritual can't be experienced by something not spiritual. So if we're saying that we're actually not, so then if we're not the soul, how are we individually experiencing it?
Well, just like we say that we can experience the pleasure of devotional service in the soul, wouldn't they say that as Brahman, Brahman can experience Brahman?
But the point is you're already Brahman. Mm-hmm. Well, how does Brahman experience Brahman? Because that means then there's two.
Yeah, and then there's the experience of Brahman.
Yeah, and the experience, then where does the experience go? Because for us, the experience is generated in the mind. So does that mean Brahman has a mind? Because you have to say Brahman has a mind to say there's pastime or, you know, but why would you have, why would there be a pastime of trying to get out of here? Mm-hmm. Because if you're looking at it from the Brahmavadi point of view, mm-hmm. then karma is useless. So only jnana is useful. Yes. So and that jnana is that the material world is useless. Why would Brahman make the material world just with all the suffering so you could understand that not having it is good? Mm-hmm. If Brahman is perfection, why would Brahman, if he's perfect, or it's perfect, or whatever, Brahman is its perfection, why would Brahman need to have a pastime of being in an inferior position to appreciate the superior?
Manga 4.
Yeah, but the point is of the feminine and masculine nature, which is that?
Yeah.
That's the feminine.
Yeah.
Even the best, you have to do something different to appreciate the best.
Right.
So therefore, it makes sense to us that Brahman would do that. For Brahman's masculine. He doesn't need to do that. He can do the same perfection every day, day in, day out, without change. That's the meaning of Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then it can't be understood. Because not only is that, even if we say it's experience in the soul, but you only experience what the soul can experience of Brahman. But what they're talking about, this purely masculine element, this soul cannot experience. So what they're experiencing is Brahman interacting with the feminine.
Yeah.
But on an impersonal level.
Yeah.
That's what they're experiencing. They're not experiencing pure Brahman, what Brahman experiences of himself. That Atmarama aspect of Brahman, that they can't experience.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist for them. So that's the whole thing. Is then again the definition is that we're all Brahman, so we're all masculine Brahman. But then why are you applying feminine needs to a masculine Brahman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
The problem is that even the concept of experience requires duality. Does it need a subject and an object?
Yes. So that's why. Then, if you're going to be happy when you merge in Brahman, there's not two things to. Yeah. It's the difference between two things.
Yeah.
You know that when you bring that difference together, it's the process of bringing two different things to a oneness.
Yeah.
where the experience of happiness is. Once it's oneness, then where's the happiness? Then again, that two-ness is there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Just thinking of, therefore, the hard-to-get technique. This is, you bring it together, as soon as it's there, then, you know, because the happiness is in bringing it together. As soon as it's together, then separate it again.
Happiness means two.
Happiness means two. And then, even more, it's weird in the, what do you call it? The Buddhist concept. Because there isn't, that means at least in the Veda, that means the impersonals, that there's at least Brahman.
Yes, yes.
You know, eternal, but in the Buddhist, there's nothing. So how does not, how it, if you become nothing, how are you going to know that you're happy? Because you're nothing. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so it doesn't make sense, the whole thing, but. But that's why he's saying here, it's an interpretation.
But that's why they're saying flawed material logic can't understand this concept.
Yes.
Beyond.
Yeah, no, it's beyond. They'll say it, but then they're trying to experience it and everything by that flawed logic. They'll say the flawed by the logic you can't, but at the same time is...
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty. So that's why he's saying here is that it's in between all this. Mm-hmm. Because anything that they're talking, one aspect of it is true. But the problem is they're only taking that one part that's true and then not taking the rest of the truths and trying to make a complete truth out of one part. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, okay, Corella is very good for you. The bitter, you know, gets the juices moving, the liver and the digestion and everything. Now, can I make a meal just out of Corella? Right? You can say it's good, but then if I take just Corella, then the bitter is pungent. It digests as pungent. It's hot. The body will become overly hot. You know, and then you get two problems from that. So that's the thing, is they only take that, oh, because it's so hot. So therefore now, the other philosophy is just yogurt. We'll just eat yogurt, you know, because this other one that creates so much heat and all that, and that creates problems, so we'll just eat yogurt, and that keeps everything cool and nice. And that. Yes, it's true if it's yogurt along with everything else, just like if it's Corella along with everything else. But that's the thing. And then it's too cold, right? And then the other thing is, no, but then now he's got a cold, so therefore we have the philosophy of just hot drinks. You just take hot drinks and everything will be fine. Then after a while, you know, you just wash everything out of your system. Then there's no nutrients. Then it's like, no, but we have to have something solid, you know, all this water and stuff. So we just eat solid. We don't drink this water. We just eat solid. You know, you understand? So that's what's going on in all these things. So material knowledge means this. Trying to make complete out of something incomplete. So it doesn't mean that they don't have knowledge. So that's the thing is, devotees may be distracted. No, but they have some knowledge. Yes, of course. Who's saying they don't have some knowledge? But to say that that is complete knowledge, then you have to not know what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That there is a skull there, and it is, you know, so many millions of years old. It's okay, great. If it works in that, the carbon thing actually worked, great. It's a million years old, but to say that that's what people used to be like, then that's stupid. You know, how does that work? Why is that the natural thing? Just because you found an old skull, why does that mean it's that everybody's like, you know, why is that? You know.
Take one thing,
you know, so, you know what I'm saying? There's Aborigines now. You know, people are eating the big like this, but they're still pygmies. Right? They're still little 3 foot tall people. Right? So now you could actually say they're the cutting edge. It's just a matter of time before everyone's like them. You know, so they say, you know, why bother with all this getting big stuff? You're gonna have to get small anyway. So we just keep the way we're perfecting small, right? You know? So it's just the whole point is that they're all going on at once. Everything's happening at once. So that's the difficulty. Is they're trying to come to a conclusion that's based on their own conditioning. It's not based, it's not subject objective. They'll say it's objective simply because it leaves out religion. If you leave out religion, then it's objective. Mm-hmm. You leave out people's own feelings, then it's objective. But you never leave out your own feelings. Right? Yeah. By such interpretation, indistinct absolute entity is imagined, right? Indistinct because they can't actually define it. And this becomes fixed as the goal of life. How do you set a goal as something indistinct? If I went with a business plan to a businessman, okay, so, you know, okay, what is it? You know, what are we going to get from it? Well, it's not exactly there. You know, we know it's there. It'll be really nice. It'll be really good. You know, like, you know, or you go to the government. Yes, now here's a strategic plan for this. You know, like that. Well, what does it look like? Well, it's not actually, you know, we can't really define it. Will they take it as serious? No, but because by the thing of opposite, therefore spiritual must mean it doesn't work like that. So it's actually completely an idiotic plan, and therefore now it's spiritual. Right? By this process, knowledge of God becomes knowledge of impersonal Brahman. This is the fourth type of knowledge. People of more steady intelligence seeking God in a pure spiritual substance with form attain the fifth state of pure knowledge. So this is based on the previous thing of the Panchakoshas.
No, this is the atheistic morality, and then impersonal and devotional. The first one is actually, atheistic immorality is the first one.
Atheistic
immorality. And atheistic morality.
And
theistic morality.
And
impersonal knowledge.
It's the same, it's Panchakosha.
Okay.
But he's not defining it by, he's giving us that aspect of the consciousness. Atheistic immorality.
Yeah.
Atheistic morality. Theistic morality.
Yes.
And then what's the next?
Impersonal.
Devotional. Yeah, no, it's the same. It means everything fits into these five. It's just it has all these different ways, just like the Adi-Daivadi devotee. It has all these different...
Yeah, he splits it up in different ways. Sometimes he splits up the devotional into Vaidhi and then Bhava as well.
Yeah, well, each one of those can have subdivisions, I think.
But depending on the five, he'll slice it up differently.
Okay, cool.
Right. Sometimes they drop out the impersonal because it's actually like a distorted form. It doesn't actually follow in the progression.
Yeah, because it's a theistic. Okay, it's because the ones in between are actually Sundays, so they're not exactly. They're not solid in themselves. They don't carry the culture really.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So atheistic immorality is clear.
Mm-hmm.
Theistic moralism is clear,
mm-hmm.
and then devotion is clear.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones in between.
Yeah.
They have the elements of both, and so that therefore that's why they're confusing. That's why art is confusing, because it's the results of Dharma used for a comma.
Mm.
Otherwise, why would you have arta if you're not going to use it for comma?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? In the normal sense, the Vedic is you get arta so you can perform more Dharma. Right? If I get more money, I can perform more yajnas.
Mm-hmm.
But then ultimately, what's the point of my doing the yajnas? If you're doing it just because I'm supposed to, but then it'll either go into the impersonal or into the devotional,
mm-hmm.
like that. So you're still going forward from there. You're not dropping down.
Mm-hmm.
But most it'll be from that. Then they'll get good facility here or in the next life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next life, then they'll have a good,
mm-hmm.
good scene.
This four type of knowledge, it's connected with five level of consciousness.
Yeah, it means it's on the platform of Vijnanamaya.
Yes.
And it's also, I mean, depending on how you're doing it, it's dealing with the Adhoksaja, because the Lord is partially there. but it's only how he pervades. It's the non-devotional, so it'll be the Brahman aspect.
And in the comparison but, with the atheistic level that you have mentioned, it's like first level, egoistic.
Number one?
I don't catch
you. No, it's mean in comparison to the five level that Prabhu was mentioning, it's the first atheistic morality is compared to the...
It's pranamoy.
Anamoy.
No, anamoy is atheistic
immorality.
Immorality.
And even then, it's divided the primitive and sophisticated.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's important.
Yes. Yes.
Primitive and sophisticated, yes. Right? Yes. Then pranamoy, then you're getting your atheistic morality. So that definitely means it's a cooperative. In other words, when you get atheistic, immoralists,
yes,
who are sophisticated. And see, by working together, they'll get a better result, more enjoyment than by not working together. Then that combined group, that's called atheistic morality.
Yes.
But it's only for their common economic benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So theistic morality, then there's some kind of concept that this morality is based on God. Well, the other one, the morality is based on economics, so it's atheistic. That's why we're, maybe I should use those terms, but then they become even more freaky for the you know, they're already getting upset enough, but when you show that what it is it's atheistic.
But this is Maharaj, like communism, like many countries are using that.
Oh, anyway, even capitalism uses it. Everybody uses it. Everybody who has an economic system is using it.
Yeah.
There's some kind of community, they're using it. You know, but you see, let's say, I don't know how far it extends, but, you know, America is like, you know, it probably comes from Europe. You know, can't remember what's the term. How does it say about the man's home is his castle or something?
Man's home?
A man's home is his castle.
That's the British. I used to hear that in school.
It's British.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The whole point is I cooperate with the society and do everything, but when I go home, it's my place and I do what I want.
Right.
You know, like that. Nobody can bother me.
Yeah.
You know. So again, it comes down to anamoy.
Yes.
You know, and then you cooperate how much you have to with the family to make that work. But you don't, it's not as much necessarily sacrifices with the outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Or it's more seen, the self-centered, while the other one is less seen. You know, it's just so. All these things they have, because within that, because then within that it's not that it's exactly, but that's the natural position of it, is anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have somebody who is only working for Artha, but they believe in God, but they're willing to go to God for their Artha. So that's kind of in between atheistic morality and theistic morality. Because the theism is only enough that you recognize to get what you want. You know what I'm saying? But it's not necessarily enough that you accept as a personal. Even the theistic morality is that you accept this as supreme, but the whole point is morality.
Yeah.
It's theistic morality. It's not theistic. You know, it's not a moral theist. It's theistic morality. So morality is still the prominence. So even there, it's kind of like your economics. You're showing the lower, the middle, and the higher of it. You know. Yes.
Yeah, at the end of this section, we're going to review this. When he says that third level, theistic morality, is actually the seed of pure knowledge, because at least there's faith in proper God.
Yeah.
But the flaw is that there's no understanding of the soul.
Oh, yes, because that comes at the fourth stage.
Yeah.
Then the problem is at the fourth stage, you understand there's a soul, but at the same time, they're trying to get rid of the soul.
Yes.
They understand there's a soul, but there's no soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's always like that, you know. You know, the people with money don't value it. The people without money value it.
Yeah.
You know. You know, so it's always like that. That's the material world. Okay. People of more steady intelligence, seeking God in a pure spiritual substance with form, attain the fifth stage of pure knowledge. Also, here he's putting in the stages of knowledge. So that would be your pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, adhoksaja, and aprakrita. All these things go together. This is pretty far out. You could put all these things, make a chart with all of them.
Earlier he was describing the sattva rajas, you know, rajas, tamas, in terms of the modes of material nature.
Oh, okay.
And then the other way is you can do it with the...
Because there's five layers.
Surya Dharma, Shakta Dharma, okay. In terms of Panchapasana.
Okay, but then that's putting Vishnu in actually the pure.
Yeah.
But you can also have the Vishnu when it's down. It's actually just the same as the Shaiva.
Yeah.
Okay.
And another one is in terms of the budding consciousness, flowering consciousness, you know, covered consciousness, Chaitanya.
Okay.
They're all there. Chart forthcoming.
Okay. Not fifth coming. Fifth level of consciousness.
That's coming next after.
According to the philosophy of Brahmagyan, the world is a creation of ignorance. It is false. There is only one substance called Brahman. Belief in reality of the world is illusion. The individual soul is Brahman covered by ignorance. By removal of ignorance, the soul becomes Brahman. But the point is the ether in the pot is still ether. You know, so it's still just as much ether as the rest of it. That's why they also have problems, because they think then there's, it's still, if it hasn't been separated technically, because it's still ether, it's still the element, still acts the same. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the problem, is then where does the illusion come in? It's covered by the pot, but just because you have some in the pot doesn't mean it acts different from ether. Mm-hmm. You know,
is that the example Ramanuja gave with the Ashwamedha cup?
Madhva.
Madhva,
it's Madhva. Ramanuja might have, but I know Madhva.
Madhva, I think.
Like that. Yeah, because it's this idea that it merges and that's it, but you can put it back. It's just. At this time, there will be no lamentation, fear, or illusion, but there's still remaining the mind, because dead matter couldn't care, or Brahman, there is no lamentation, no fear, or illusion. So why would you care? That's the whole point. Why would you want that as a goal if Brahman is simply a state of existence? It's not a goal, because Ananda is in goal. So that means when you have existence and goal, then you have a process to bring them together. Mm-hmm. Right? But once they've been brought together, then the goal shifts again. Mm-hmm. So then once you've attained Brahmananda, why would it continue? You know, if you're going on, well, everything is opposite, you know, then maybe. But the thing is you're not there to experience it. You know, unless you're going to take, This is called Advaitavad, monism, or pantheism. Right? So pantheism means, but also the many gods, no? So pantheism, or pantheism is nature?
Yeah, you see that, like, every element in nature has some god.
Okay, so it's not so much about the demigods, it's about the supreme in nature.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what do they call it, all the demigod kind of?
Polytheism.
Okay, so pantheism is in nature. Okay. Advaitavad has two types, Mayavad and Vivartavad. Oh, okay, Vivartavad.
That's...
No, but I thought Vivartavad means illusion. So even within this, there's a difference. Because then you have Vivartavad and Parinamavad.
Yeah. These are just different nomenclature, different syntax for the same concept as Parinama and Vivartavad.
Oh, okay. According to Mayavad, the world is absolutely false. There is only a perception of the world due to illusion. According to Yuvartavad, the creation as real event is accepted to some small degree. Creation is of two varieties. So here the creation of two varieties, vikara and vivarta. When a perceived object changes its nature but is accepted as true, that is called vikara, or transformation. For instance, the true substance, milk, transforms into another true substance, yogurt. Okay, so vivarta, creation. So in vivarta you have these two. Or they're saying that vivarta is the transformation and the mayavad is the vikara. Is that?
No. In the first one, in mayavad, there's absolutely no connection. It's just pure illusion, like he's saying. So there's no transformation or illusion.
Transference. Yeah, but then they can't. How do they explain the soul being separated or coming under illusion or whether illusion? They still have the same problems, but yeah, they just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So in vivarta, then there's talk of a transformation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it comes in two types.
Okay, vikara and vivarta.
Yeah.
Okay, so vikara is transformation. When a perception arises which is not true, it's called vivarta. For instance, to perceive a snake when only a rope exists, or to perceive silver when only a seashell exists, is vivarta, illusion.
So that means that pranama and vikara are taken as the same in this instance.
Okay, so they're just doing it within here.
Because then within vikara you have brahma pranama and shakti pranama. So it's just transformations.
So, but they also use vivarta twice.
Yeah, within vivarta, there's another specialized vivarta.
For instance, there are many varieties of mayavad and vivarta, such as jivavad, but they all agree on some principal points. One, there is no substance except Brahman. Where's it? Is the footnote? Do we skip it? It's at the end of this one. Okay. What is perceived is not true. It is conditional perception or conditional reality. So some are saying but what are you perceiving then? If they're saying it is a transformation of Brahman, like milk to yogurt, means is the rock there, but just you're perceiving it as valuable or not? That's the illusion? Or that there's a rock is there? That means what's the difference?
Yeah, I think it's just a perception, according to this school.
Okay, one is that there absolutely is no rock there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's no eyes to see the rock. You're not there. Nothing's there. Yeah. So that's like pure Buddhism. Right? Okay, so it's just a matter of how much it's vikarid into Vedic.
They're completely committed to the world is false.
All of them.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's just a matter of whether it's the perception that's false means there's something, there's some substance there, and now whether that's of value or not, that's the false, or there absolutely is nothing there, but both of them will say the world's false.
Yeah, that's their famous aphorism, Brahma Satya Jagan Nitya, right?
Okay.
Is that the only reality is Brahma, everything else is just a product of illusion.
Okay. Two, there's no individual soul. It exists only as a transformation of Brahman or illusion. Footnote one. Jiva Goswami, Tattva Sandarbha. Interesting. Jiva Goswami in his Tattva Sandarbha says, Jiva Goswami, Tattva Sandarbha. Okay. Therefore, it is highly improper to conclude that one undivided conscious Brahman, who is the basis of Maya and the embodiment of knowledge, can simultaneously fall under the influence of Maya and be thus subject to avidya, ignorance. That the Supreme Lord never comes under the influence of Maya, whereas Jivas does, illustrates the difference between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord, and thus proves that the natures of the Jiva and the Lord are essentially distinct from each other. Right, because if you have one undivided conscious Brahman, who's the basis of Maya and the embodiment of knowledge, then how does he come under that? How do you,
Yeah.
You know, and if it's for pastime, it's that, you know, somebody does for a pastime, goes out in the garage, gets a hammer, and smacks themselves on the head, drives a nail through their foot. Yeah, it was boring in the house, you know, the soft, comfortable slippers and the nice rugs and, you know, all that. And I just wanted some change, you know, like that. It's just, like, stupid. Okay, the difference between the jiva and the Lord cannot be explained simply as paricheda, separation, or pratibimba, reflection of Brahman into different types of upadis, limiting adjuncts. If the upadis are considered empirical realities and not illusory, still Brahman being beyond the scope of any... Any division cannot become divided or limited by such upadis.
Yeah.
The point is how does Brahman, the sun is not in the pots.
Yeah.
If it's a reflection, then it's not actually there. But the point is what are these pots? Where is all that? And that's separate from the sun. So.
I think that's what he means by empirical, in the sense, is rather than just be a product of your mind, there's actually some tangible entity. That's what he means by empirical.
Okay. So it means there is a pot there,
yeah.
And there is water in the pot, and the sun is reflecting it.
Yeah. But he's saying that there's basically two versions. You know, one claims that there is an empirical entity, one says there's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not meaning that there is actually a pot there.
I guess it means that the illusion of individuality, there is no individual entity, so I guess there is no pot. That would be the...
But the problem is that where the pot comes from, they make the reflection, because if you get a reflection, you have to have something to reflect on.
Yeah.
You know? And if you take the, what was it, the paricheda, separation, how do you separate something that's indivisible?
Yeah.
And if it's a reflection, then there has to be something else to reflect off of.
Yeah.
You know, so where did Maya come from, and where does the reflection come from? If Maya is what is reflected, where did Maya come from?
Reflecting on.
Besides, Brahman being devoid of attributes, all pervading and undivided, can cast no reflections.
Yeah.
Since Brahman has no attributes, it can have no relation with upadis. Because an upadi is an attribute, so how do you relate to an attribute if you don't have one?
Yeah.
Being all-pervading, Brahman cannot be divided into an object and its reflections, and being undivided, Brahman cannot be seen, so you can't see the reflection either. So that you're actually thinking that you're seeing a reflection when there is no reflection.
Yeah.
But the reason that you think you're seeing is reflection because there's a reflection.
And that's the other point, is you say the sun or the moon's reflecting, but the sun has a shape, it has a form. But how does the all-pervading reflect? You can't see if it has no form.
How does it reflect?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And the other point is, if it's, you know, there's so much light, but everything we know that has light is coming from a form. There's at least a shape that's providing that light. But how does all-pervading
provide light? Light or knowledge or anything. Yeah.
Exactly.
This is Jiva Goswami, so he's sharp. He's good. Right? And being undivided, Brahman cannot be seen. The sky, not possessing any visible attributes, has no reflections. That's true. You can't see ether reflected in a pot.
No. You can see clouds or you can see.
Yeah, yeah. What is seen are the reflection of the limited luminous bodies in the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pretty clever. Okay, we're still on that, but we've also gone to the next page.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai.
Samaveta
Bhakti ki.
Jai.
Somehow it'll disappear.